I'm Duncan McLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm in Centurion in Pretoria today to talk to a veteran of South Africa's IT industry, Werner Lindemann, who was recently appointed as the new Chief Sales Officer of BCX, formerly Business Connection, now part of Telkom, of course. Werner is very well known in the local IT industry, having held senior roles at several big organizations, including IBM and PwC. So it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the podcast today to share some of his insights. Well, Werner, good to see you.
Yeah, thank you very much for the invitation. I look forward to our discussion.
Great stuff. So I called you a veteran. I'm not meaning to call you old. you have a lot of experience in the IT sector, having worked for some major organizations yes. in the space, and also having taken a break over the last few years to work perhaps in a smaller environment in the media industry at Kagiso.
Yes.
But tell us a bit about your history. How did you get into IT?
Without going into all the history, I'm actually an engineer by training. And by accident landed up, after a few years working in the manufacturing environment, worked for PwC. PwC decided to sell its consulting business globally in 2002 after the Enron scandal, where I ended up at IBM, 42 quarters in IBM.
42 quarters.
IBM, everything is by quarter. So 10 and a half years, of which 4 years I spent internationally. Running businesses for IBM across Europe, Middle East, and Africa. So 2 years in Switzerland, and then 2 years in Dubai, and then I came home.
It must have been quite interesting. What did that teach you, working in those markets?
You know, it's quite interesting. People always ask me, why did I want to go to Europe? You know, as a guy that grew up in the Free State, I was going to go and study engineering. I always wanted to say, can I compete against guys in the Western economies or the developed economies, and it was interesting to go and work there and to go and prove myself against guys that's used to working in big developed markets. I think it's a couple of interesting things that you learn in a school like IBM and working in big global markets. The first thing is operational excellence. Those guys, when you report directly on your weekly discussions to the Americans, it is ruthless. It's bullet point reports. You need to know your numbers inside out, and you need to know what you're doing to deliver to a client. It also was interesting working in especially Eastern Europe and Russia, because since 1988, I actually ventured outside of South Africa and the rest of Africa. Hmm. So for 15 years, I worked across the continent. And what the realization for me working in totally foreign territories like Eastern Europe and Russia, and even the Middle East, is that you can actually build relationships. Business is still about relationships, about clients trusting you because you said you're going to deliver something and you deliver it. But it's also about learning in which environment and culture you operate in a different manner. And I'll use Africa as an example. Nigeria is a listening culture. When you go and see the CEO of a bank, you listen to them. You listen to them, and at the end, you discuss where you can help. If you go to Angola, in my opinion, is a telling culture. They want to hear about the experiences before they make up their mind where they want to engage with you. And I think the cultural nuances for me was the most exciting part of working in many different countries across the world.
Interesting. How would you describe the South African culture?
I think that's why I loved Eastern Europe, because South African culture is also about building relationships, about building trusted relationships that when you say you're going to deliver something, you do it. And for me, that's one of the reasons why I decided to come back to Africa. I love working here, and I love the relationships that I've built up throughout the years, and how I can help guys on the ground make a difference.
So you came back, when did you come back from Europe?
Middle of 2010.
Okay, and is that when you went to Kagiso, or did you continue with IBM for a while?
Yeah, I was another 2 years at IBM. I ran IBM Sub-Saharan Africa services business. So operated over 24 countries. One of the big contracts we had was Bharti Airtel. Mm-hmm. We ran IBM Bev stuff at that stage, etc. It was quite an intensive period, because it was about 1,800 people across these territories. And then I got the opportunity through another ex-IBM and Mark Harris that contacted me and say, come and play on the other side. And that's when I left to Kagiso Media, which I joined the group for the last 5 years, of which the last 2.5 years I ran advertising and media sales subsidiary called MediaMark, which has got two shareholders, Kagiso Media and Lagardère, the French media company. So it was, for me, it was a wonderful experience and a wonderful learning curve the last 5 years.
Very different industry. I mean, was it a bit of an uphill learning curve when you got there?
You know, working for IBM and going through all the different changes in the business. I don't know whether you remember in the internet economy, when the internet bubble burst, everything was about e-business. Mm-hmm. Then it went to on-demand business. Then it went to cloud. All of these things were about digitization or digitalization of industries. So how do we drive digital transformation? Now, anybody that's au fait with the media industry would know that the media industry has actually been one of the industries that's been disrupted earliest of all the industries. So just go and look at record companies in 2002, 2003. See how newspapers are being disrupted. How people are shifting in the television world to binge watching, etc., OTT type of services. That digitalization of industries or that digital transformation has happened in the media industry. And for me to sit on the other side of the fence and thinking through how to create propositions and owning the consumer through their whole content consumption journey has actually opened my eyes in terms of how I need to speak to clients about their consumer journey, how they engage with their clients across multiple touch points in their consumer journey. So for me, it was an amazing learning curve. And it changes my discussions that I have with clients today because I didn't necessarily understand the B2C relationships that they had with their consumers when I was previously in the IT industry.
So you've been at BCX for going on just 3 weeks now.
Yes.
what have you found?
For me, it's quite... firstly, is I walked on my second night, I walked into an industry function and I realized how small the industry was because I knew more than 50% of the people in the room. So it's still some of the same old guys. What's interesting is that the narrative has changed over the last 5 years in the IT industry. Everybody's talking about not what's the piece of equipment we can provide to you or can we sell you a cloud service. It is about what is the business journey that you as a client is going through. I'll use an example. Yesterday I had a client here, a mining client that we're busy working with, that's got multinational operations, headquartered in Australia. And we're busy working with them on a journey that they're busy with. But they start at the same point. First thing is, how do you help me stabilize my operations? Second discussion is, how do we drive value out of the investments that I've made? And then the third discussion point is, where is the strategic play or where are the strategic plays that we need to drive our business now towards, and how can USBCX help us on that journey? So what I've learned in this is that there's still a similar narrative. The level of the narrative has changed. However, if you sit in a systems integrator or IT service provider, or as we would like to talk about BCX, not as a telco anymore, but a techco, you need to make sure that there's very specific industry discussions, vertical industry discussions that you can have with clients, like BCX have built over the years, for example, in retail. But you also need to think about what are the assets that you can build that you can replicate across multiple industries, because it is about delivering service faster. I mean, if you just look how IT has changed over the last 8 years, everything's about agile. Don't tell me you're going to deliver this project over 2 years. What is your milestone in the first 6 weeks? And then how do we change everything? How do we release every 2 weeks something else? So the discussion in terms of the journey has not changed. The discussion has changed in terms of we want to see faster results. And to be stable in your environment, is a given. Alphonse Mangale, the group CEO or CIO of Standard Bank, was in the last IT web Brainstorm magazine. And in there, he talked about, in Standard Bank, he can't have a discussion with the business if everything around him is not stable. So that stability around the IT environment must be a given if he wants to talk transformational journey with the business.
And so the conversations are changing. In the past, it was the responsibility of the head of IT to basically ensure that the systems are operational to support the business. Now the discussion is about how those systems can be used to grow the business.
That's correct. And what's interesting also is the lines in terms of the discussion are blurring. So we always in the past talked about the lines of business has very specific needs that they might be driving. But we've seen over the last 5 to 8 years some of these things already in South Africa coming to fruition. If you talk about, everybody talked about analytics and big data starting 2011, 2012. Now the analytics and big data discussion is actually a marketing division discussion about what can they learn from the consumer and then what's the implication of what they want to do in the business. So that role between the CIO and the CMO is becoming closer. Now, some businesses have created a chief digital officer to drive that bridge between traditional IT and the CMO. I think some of these things are gonna merge as we go over time. But if the CIO in the IT environment is not able to have that conversation, they're also going to be left behind.
How advanced are South African companies relative to their international peers in having these sort of discussions and getting ready for this digital transformation? And that's a bit of a buzzword, but how advanced are our corporate customers in doing this?
So if I can talk about a few industries to give you an example. When I lived in Switzerland in 2007, I was quite surprised about how far South African banking was actually ahead of Swiss banking, if I talk as a consumer. Mm-hmm. And now if you're going to talk to any of the banks and see what their plans are in terms of massive transformation, some of the banks, calling them by name, are busy with revamping their total application layer to become a digital bank. So some of the more traditional banks. Some of the banks have created innovation centers around fintech that they do the testing and then applying it back into their business. I know some of the banks have been on fintech projects for 2 years that they've been testing it with global partners out of Silicon Valley. So I think if you talk about the banking industry, I think we actually, without boasting, we're leading in a lot of these discussions as South African industry.
Now, before you continue with that thought, just sticking with banking for a moment, there's a lot of interesting things happening in the financial services space at the moment. We've got a major new bank coming in the form of Discovery Bank, and we've got a lot of new digital startups launching in the space. Michael Jordan's new venture, Patrice Motsepe's new venture, and there's talk that these new guys are coming in at very low cost and potentially could disrupt this industry. Do you think the incumbents, you say they're very advanced in terms of their investments and their thinking around digital and IT, do you think they're ready for this challenge?
Look, without talking about banking wars, I think one of the tough discussions around new players coming to the market is how do regulators operate around that. And I'm not a regulatory expert, so just my 2 cents worth around it. When you look at telecommunications, when new guys come into the mobile space, there's always a discussion about, well, we've made so much investment, how do you flatten the landscape. I think the same thing in terms of regulation is going to happen in banking, where a lot of the traditional banks have invested in networks, in ATM networks, etc. I think that discussion needs to happen about, so is it the traditional banks that carry the backbone costs of all of this, or how does that actually plan out? And I'm not an expert there. I think that's one of the key discussion points that need to happen. Yes, the new banks are coming on board. We've seen how Capitec has taken market share. I mean, they've been phenomenal, but they've been very focused on a very specific market share that they go after. If you go and look at our banks, and you can go and walk in anybody like Investec, Nedbank, FNB, APSA, Standard Bank, there's a lot of digitization that's currently busy working and happening in the banks. Some of them are further down the line than others. I actually think our banks are very, very well advanced in terms of technology in the South African environment. If you compare South African as a banking sector versus anybody else.
All right. So you were going to talk about some other industries as well?
Yes, I think so banking, we're far advanced. I think retail is catching up. Not that our retailers are not advanced in the South African environment. I mean, the retailers are spending a lot of money on technology, again, to understand, to bring the point of sale device information closer to their supply chain. There's a lot of innovative things that guys are playing around in the retail space, whether it's AR or VR in the retail environment. And I think the next fight or the next war in the retail environment is how people use technology or content to actually get feet in the store. Mm-hmm. So I know some of the retailers over the last few years have been playing around providing free internet to consumers coming into the store and then access to very specific snippets of content. And they're playing with other media players. I mean, a MultiChoice with a Jukes and a Vuv, etc., have been talking to some of these retailers in terms of how they can combine content for free to get people's feet into the store. So I think that fight is going to be interesting because it is for them about feet through the store. But again, if you talk about base infrastructure, again, our retailers have done well in South Africa, but it's now about the next step. It's about mining the consumer data. I don't know personally because I haven't spent a huge amount of time in the retail space in the last couple of years. I don't know how advanced they are in terms of leveraging their consumer information. I know Pick and Pay with their Smart Shopper and ShopRite Checkers have done a couple of things at Woolies, but it's now about what is the next step around that and how do they use it to engage with their consumers on a different level.
And I suppose also figuring out how to retain and grow market share in what is a very, very difficult trading environment. Yeah. I mean, we've seen the ShopRite numbers coming out last week, which were quite shocking. It must be, I mean, what role can technology play in the retail environment to try and offset some of those pressures on consumers and the impact that's having on their margins?
Yeah. So I think if I go to a Richard Brescher at Pick and Pay or a Peter Ingebrecht at ShopRite and I'm going to try and tell them how I can grow their top line, they're probably going to laugh at me because it's not my game. I think where technology can play a role in the retail environment is to help them think differently about the need for investment, continuous investment in technology, and how you take cost out over time. So, and the cost out over time is the age-old discussion about how do we standardize? How do we rationalize and consolidate? How do we drive this to a infrastructure that we pay on a consumption basis, etc.? So it gets us to the cloud discussion. How do we drive down network costs by moving the computing power closer to the edge of the network? So that's the role that we can play for a retailer is by driving their costs down because 1% or 2% cost reduction on IT spend for a retailer goes directly down to the bottom line.
Mm. But in this world that we're moving to, I mean, the phrase that I've seen bandied about quite a lot lately is every company is now a tech company. I don't know if you agree with that, but you know, obviously technology is underpinning more and more of what runs businesses and helps them to grow. So in an environment like South Africa, we've had a weak economy for so many years. Is it wise to be cutting IT spending? Is it, I mean, obviously there are efficiencies that you can look to drive, but if you're cutting spending, are you actually doing yourself a disservice in the longer term?
It's interesting. I had an interesting discussion with a client this morning, a manufacturing client, a big, big manufacturing client. To give you an idea, they do about 40 billion in turnover, so it's not a Mickey Mouse company. Now, what they have been doing over the last few years with us, the last 2.5 years, is to drive cost out of their base. and to leverage the investments that we've made as BCX over time to make sure that when the economy turns, and their prediction is between the next 12 and 18 months in their sector, they will be poised for growth. So we've done a bunch, not that they've been cutting on their IT, we've done a bunch of transformational stuff on their IT. So to give you a couple of examples. So the first thing that we did is we moved their whole IT environment into our data centers. Now we've got sunk cost in our data centers. We've got three tier four data centers around the country. So because we've got the sunk cost, it's cheaper to move it to our data centers than them trying to do it themselves. Step number two is application migration to the cloud environment, because I think that's people underestimate the complexity of application migration to the cloud environment, because you need to make sure that firstly that you have a mission critical grade cloud environment, and then thirdly is how do you then transform this to a consumption based model where you build all the managed services around it. I think people underestimate again when you talk about cloud, what does it mean to go to a cloud? So if you go to a cloud is a production environment. However, what we've been specializing in, and this is not a BCX punt, but just to give you the difference, is you need to manage services around even a cloud environment. So whether it is managed backup, whether it is business continuity services around that, etc. So if you don't think about that, just moving it to the cloud to save cost or to have an easier production environment, that's not the ultimate reason for moving into the cloud. And the client said to us this morning when I met with him, he says, by 2019, I don't want to own any of this. I don't want to own any of this. And the way we've structured the contract is he'll have an environment that's always refreshed. We are busy with, as I said, application migration of the cloud. We're going to do, on his ERP, we're going to do application consolidation. He's sitting with 9 different ERPs. So that's one of the projects we're going to do in our environment for him. And we've done the work. We will drive down his total cost of ownership over a few years, because now we accountable and responsible for it, because if we don't drive the cost out, our contract doesn't make an economic sense for us. So he shifted all the responsibility to us with the right service level and transformation that he expects from us as a provider.
Let's talk a bit about cloud, because it seems to be the big disruptive thing everyone's talking about right now. And we've of course got big data centers coming in, Amazon, Microsoft, all the rest of them coming to South Africa. What's the sort of conversation you're having around that? Are there particular industries that are, I would imagine there are particular industries that are more amenable to the idea of moving their internal IT infrastructure into an external cloud-based service? I'd imagine there are others that want to maintain control at least some of their stuff internally, and I'd imagine there's still others who just simply say, well, we don't want to do this because having our own IT infrastructure is a competitive advantage. Are there any guys who say that?
So it's interesting, even some of the banks that I talk to have got a view they need to move big portions of their workload to hyperscale cloud environments. Mm-hmm. Now, whether it's a hyperscale cloud environment or a cloud environment where you can put mission critical systems on, I think there's always going to be a client preference around, do I move everything onto the cloud? Is it an application move, or is the application and a database move? So I think, again, it can't be a one-size-fits-all. If I create an environment, I would like a client to be all out, but we will never have that discussion because we need to provide for client-specific needs. Now, I think what's going to disrupt this whole cloud space, I'm already at the next step. So everybody's been talking for the last 15 months about edge computing. So I think the next phase of cloud has got two angles to it. The first is edge computing, where you can't just centralize everything in a specific cloud space. I think a lot of the processing capacity, especially when you want to engage on a consumer journey, a lot of the transaction capability needs to be on the edge of your network that you built. So I think there's going to be a little bit of a transition in this whole cloud discussion, where everybody in the beginning said private cloud, then hybrid cloud, then public cloud. I think you're still going to have this hybrid cloud discussion, firstly. Secondly, hybrid cloud is going to be influenced by how you actually deploy systems and processing capacity to the edge of your network. The third discussion, which I believe is going to come to the fore, is then how do you use a combination, and I'm using a combination of three things. How you use a combination of IoT, artificial intelligence, and machine learning. Because again, if you start having high volumes that you push through an algorithm that needs to do high volume stuff to you, you will not put it in your central processing capacity. Again, you'll put it close to the edge where the processing needs to happen. So all of these things are going to influence how cloud is going to play out over the next few years. I don't have a clear picture in my mind, but what I know is that we need to cater for these capabilities and these abilities, because what we think today is going to be true is going to be different in 2 years from now.
Mm. And what about real-time business? I know this is a bit of a hype thing, but the idea of having all information available instantly and being able to do interesting things, predictions, predictive analytics, and all that sort of stuff. How close are we to businesses actually being able to do this stuff? The CEO sitting in front of his desk and being able to have an immediate real-time picture of anything that's going on in his business.
So I talked about the media industry earlier.
Mm.
I think the media industry is actually at the forefront of some of this. So if you think about how brands are doing things, I think it was in 2015 at the Super Bowl in America where the lights went off. I don't know whether you remember.
I don't.
So the lights went off, and when they've got that break, when they get the artist on, etc. And within 1 minute, Oreo tweeted something. So you can still have something like, you can still have an Oreo in the dark. Okay. Now, if you think about how media industry is changing,
mm-hmm.
and how digital advertising has transformed the way consumers engage with brands. Now, digital advertising has got their own problems around brand safety, et cetera, but just to use an example, if you place an ad in a newspaper today, you can get typically the same reach for a sixth of the price on digital environment. Now, for me, digital advertising is already real time because it's a combination of tracking people with cookies, seeing what people are doing on one website and tracking them to doing a pixel drop on them, tracking them on the next website, whether they come back to your brand site, doing real time bidding and serving an ad on a very specific site to them. So that's why I'm saying I think the media industry is ahead of the curve there. Now, doing real-time stuff actually dovetails very closely with this whole discussion around edge computing. Because for the ability to do stuff in-store as a retailer or in a branch as a bank or as somebody enters your digital channel in a banking environment, that creates the need to think differently about a combination of a centralized and distributed environment. And that's basically what edge computing will drive, and having the capability to do that real-time interaction right where the consumer engage on that channel. So it's coming. Some industries are ahead of others, but those things are going to become more prevalent in a lot of industries.
Just coming back to the cloud just for a moment. Again, Microsoft Azure is launching this year, probably earlier rather than later this year. Amazon has said it's going to build a cloud data center infrastructure in South Africa. I think it's coming early next year, if I'm not mistaken. Do you, as BCX and the other systems integration type companies, IT services players in South Africa, view those providers, those giant international cloud providers, as a competitive threat or someone you'll work with? And I know I'm asking this in the context of what you said at the beginning of the discussion. You said that this industry is still all about relationships, and in many respects these guys are putting infrastructure on the ground. It's all automated and log in, pay us, get your services. How do you see the dynamics of the industry here in South Africa changing as a direct result of these companies coming in, and what impact is it going to have on the local industry? Is it good or bad in aggregate?
So I'll talk about the... I think there's a role for them to play. So if you go and look today in BCX cloud environment, our enterprise cloud environment, we sit with about 250 clients on our enterprise cloud environment. Now, there's a couple of things we're busy doing. We want to give a client single screen of whatever he does. Now, this single screen might mean that he's got stuff in our enterprise cloud environment. We're busy deploying a mission critical application cloud environment also for customers that want to use their move their core production environments into cloud. And some clients want to have access to public cloud. So whether you provide something on your own premise or to a client, you need to be able to give them a single view of access to all these different things. Now, if you're a hyperscale vendor like Azure or a AWS, on basic cloud services, you are going to be cheaper in the market. And there's a play for that, where somebody want to provision a quicker test and development environment, etc. However, if you want to have a managed service around very specific things, I think that's where you will still go to a local provider and say, I want to manage service around these things. And by the way, can you also give me access through my one portal or my one glass view in terms of how I get access to the public portions of Azure or AWS? I think we'll see how it plays out. We're going to play with developing relationships with Azure, because we're a big Microsoft partner, and with AWS, because I think there's an opportunity for us also. There's a lot of clients that's busy with that need to think about application cloud migration. So whether it is a application migration of Microsoft or whether it's a SAP HEC type of environment, that's where we can help them, because we've got the skills on the application side to do the migration. So again, it doesn't matter whether they sit in our environment or some portions go and sit in a public hyperscale environment. There's still a role for us to play in terms of providing a managed service across this.
So you'll work with whichever cloud provider makes sense for the customer, though you've got your own cloud data center.
Yeah, but I mean, the importance of a managed service provider is actually to provide an aggregated service to the client. Mm. And that aggregated service doesn't mean that everything that the client needs sits in our environment. It is about how we play that aggregation role, that they trust us, that we do the right thing on their behalf.
Great, Werner. Before I let you go, let's talk a little bit about BCX.
Yes.
You've only been here for 3 weeks, so maybe this is a bit of an unfair question, but BCX has been through a lot of disruption over the last decade or so. I mean, it's been through acquisitions and mergers all the way back to the Versatel integration with QData, and then of course the Mopatlane twins bought into the business, and it evolved from there, and eventually Telkom tried to buy it and failed, and then came back a couple of years later and succeeded. And it's now a subsidiary of Telkom. It's moved offices from Midrand to here in Centurion. We know it's going through a tough spot at the moment with some restructuring, which I know we can't talk about in this particular discussion today. But let's look forward a bit. In light of everything that's happened in this business, it's now part of a large telco. Where do you see BCX going in the coming years?
Okay. So maybe if you don't mind, I want to step back a little bit.
Sure.
In my discussions when BCX and Telkom was talking to me about joining BCX, I had a interesting discussion with our group CEO, Sipho Maseko. Mm-hmm. And he asked me in the discussion, he said, so tell me why you really want to join BCX. I need to know this. And I said to him, I've got a romanticized view about BCX. He said to me, why? I said to him, when I ran IBM hardware business in 2004, we created the Strategic Growth Alliance program with BCX. And I remember all the guys that worked with us in those days. And we took BCX's IBM sales in 2.5 years from $2 million a year to $35 million a year. And for me, what was the amazing thing that I realized at that stage is the unbelievable market power that BCX have in terms of their close-knit relationships with clients, how they engage with clients, how clients trust them. Now, nobody will deny that in this BCX and Telkom Enterprise merger, not everything was moonshine and roses, and there's been some interesting integration that's happened, etc. But now take the BCX client base and add that to the Telkom client base. It's an amazing integration if you think about it. We sit with 27,000 clients currently that we service. Of that, about 3,000 clients spend more than 250,000 rand a year with us. I mean, it's big business. We've got multi-million rand contracts with other clients. The exciting thing is the full service offering that we can take to them. I've never sat myself in an environment where we can take a quad play to a client, where we can talk to them about telecommunication services and connectivity, where we can talk to them about mobility. And yeah, I'm not talking about I'm going to give you a mobile contract. It's about how do you use mobile integration, workforce mobility in your environment, how we have a data center discussion, so a land data center discussion with them, infrastructure discussion, and an application discussion. What's interesting is we're working closely with Telstra currently because they've got a very similar business in Australia. And it's interesting in exchanging ideas how we are ahead of the curve in terms of our IT solutions, but they've done other interesting things in the telecommunications space because of their global operations. So we are sharing ideas, and I tell you, by looking at the services that we're offering and how we're going to transform the services we're going to take to market, there's nobody really that can offer something that we do. So my levels of excitement about what we are busy doing in BCX for me is amazing. Interesting, I've visited a lot of customers because that's my job over the last 3 weeks. And not one customer has said to me, BCX is a bad company. Everybody has got their opinion about things that we need to do to help them in their environment better, to provide value add, to fix, etc. And I appreciate those discussions. But not one client has said to me, listen, we hate BCX. Mm. You guys are a useless company, etc. So it shows that when we get to make sure that we embed the things that we need to do for clients that we promise them, there's no stopping on what we want to do in terms of our own company. There's exciting times ahead of us.
Werner Lindemann is newly appointed Chief Sales Officer of BCX. Thank you so much for talking to Tech Central today.
Thank you very much for the conversation. Mm-hmm.